Okay, thanks, Jean-Louis. My name is Richard Shaw. I'm with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and I'm happy to be here in sunny California. I'm going to talk today about our initial soil survey recently completed, and as Hermine mentioned in the previous presentation, it's now available on Web Soil Survey, our official source of soil survey information. So let's see if this works. Yes. Okay, I'm going to talk about the survey area, a little bit about the objective, as this wasn't the first soil survey we completed in New York City, about our methods, some of the results, and what's next for our agency in New York City. A little bit about the geographic setting. New York City is 5 boroughs, which are also counties. 4 of them are islands. It's not the biggest city, a little less than 200,000 acres of land, but from what I've seen, it's got more open space than any other big city in the U.S., 25%. It's also the most populous city in the United States. You know, usually we get credit for our soil survey for the number of acres we map, but we are a service agency, and I like to think that the number of people served by the soil survey is important, so I always say that the number of taxpayers per acre are just as important as the number of acres you map. So I don't get any more credit for it. But okay, the geomorphic setting, 3 physiographic provinces in New York City, New England upland with the gneisses and schists, Marble in the north, Triassic lowland and Staten Island, which is the red sedimentary rocks, associated igneous rocks, and Atlantic coastal plain in the south, unconsolidated sand silts and clays. If you prefer MLRAs, number 1 and 2 are MLRA 144A, which is the New England and eastern New York upland, and number 3 is the 149B, which is the Long Island, Cape Cod coastal lowland. The city is completely covered by glacial deposits. We've got till, we've got a terminal moraine running east-west through the city, about a half mile to 2 miles wide, rolling hills, some ridge and swale topography. South of the terminal moraine, that yellow line marks the southern extent of the terminal moraine. South of that is a broad, gently sloping outwash plain. You've got some post-glacial deposits of alluvium and tidal marsh. Top it off with anthropogenic disturbance, and it makes for a lot of parent materials for soil development. Okay. Like I mentioned, we completed 4 what we called high-intensity soil surveys in the city. Okay, small parcels, say lot size, minimum size delineation. We also completed a very general soil survey of the whole city, 1 inch to the mile scale. So what we wanted to do here was provide, cover the city with a little more detail, and of course have something on Web Soil Survey. Okay. So our methods were differentiating the soils, what I call naturally deposited materials, you know, things like till, outwash, alluvium, from the soils formed in human-altered, human-transported materials from the miscellaneous areas, those non-soil areas or areas that are unsuitable for plant growth. Okay, so dividing these 3 things up. We ended up mapping the human-transported soils to the series level. Okay, first of all, our users wanted to know the physical and chemical properties of those soils. Second of all, we found enough uniformity in the fill, especially in the large contiguous open spaces, that we could map it to the series level. So we differentiated the HTM series by parent material type, including artifact content. Okay, we made a break at 10%, less than 10% artifacts in the greater than 2 millimeter fraction, we called a clean soil, greater than or equal than 10%, we called an artifactual soil. Soils in the same series would have the same horizontation, ranging characteristics, drainage class. Okay. Important reference material, we use this surficial geology map by Merrill from 1902. Use that as a guide to original parent materials around the city. Also, in areas with a lot of impervious surfaces or urban land, we use it to delineate those map units and also designate substratum types. There's an example. In an area we would have, let's say, more than 90% impermeable material, we would call it an urban land. With till substratum, we would add a substratum phase to that. Okay, just to provide a little more information to the user. So the legend ended up 236 map units, 37 soil series in naturally deposited materials, and four of those were established right in New York City, 29 soil series in human transported material, and 27 of those were established in the city. Soils in the mudflats and alluvium were a little too variable to map to the series level, and we identified six miscellaneous areas. Okay. Here's some results based on percent of land area. According to our findings, the city is about 63% impervious cover, okay, and about 28% human transported material soils, and about 9% of the land area is covered by the natural soils. Okay. I haven't really seen figures like this for any other city, but I thought it was a pretty interesting factoid. And here's the breakdown by borough. And you could see the extent of impervious cover ranges from almost three-quarters in Manhattan to about a half in Staten Island. Okay. And accordingly, the soils in naturally deposited material range from 5% in Manhattan to about 20% in Staten Island. The extent of land area covered by fill fluctuates between about 20 and 30% in all the boroughs. If you look at the geographic distribution of those three types, the impervious, the naturally deposited soils, and the human transported soils, you can see a lot of the open space is concentrated along the terminal moraine, you know, which is the hilly, irregular topography and probably the last part of the city to be developed. To a lesser extent, there's some open space along some of the coastline and quite a bit above the northern boundary. Let's see if I can get this to work. Of the city up there in the Bronx. Okay. And another trend, which I thought was pretty interesting, it seems like naturally deposited soils are sort of like at the inner core of a lot of the open space, okay, surrounded by a lot of fill material. Okay. So just sort of a geographic trend. Looking at the breakdown of the soils in naturally deposited material, percent of land area citywide, most of it is till. The red till is in Staten Island, the brown till is everywhere else. I was really happy to see that there's still 2% of the land area, almost 2% of the land area in New York City in tidal marsh. Okay, and there's less of the soils in outwash, which sort of makes sense because that would be, you know, based on the soil properties and the level landscapes, that would probably be the first to be developed. So, some soils found in lesser amounts, but interesting because they're unique to New York or sort of add to the petro diversity. Some serpentine soil, till soils in Staten Island. Created a new series for we call eroded and redeposited slope wash over till in the depressions in the Bronx in Manhattan. A beautiful soil, greater than 1 meter lust cap over till in northern Manhattan along the Hudson River, and some glacial lacustrine over till soils in the Long Island Sound up in the Bronx. So, looking at the soils in the human altered material, the winner was the clean loamy fill over till, which covers about 12% of the city, of the land area of the city. Also quite a bit of the construction debris soils, about 6%. The other parent material types of human transported material that we identified were clean fill over outwash or marine sand, quite a bit of sandy dredge materials in the city, soils in domestic landfills, and some coal ash soils. Okay. We did quite a bit of lab sampling in New York City. We got over 100 pedons. You can see the geographic distribution. Some of it is related to our special projects. We had a project in Manhattan with Con Edison where they wanted to determine the urban background levels of trace metals and PAHs. So we got to look at what I considered the properties of the soils in the urban core We also did some work trying to correlate artifact type and content with trace metal concentration in the fine earth fraction of the soils. And we looked at quite a few pedons for our urban carbon study, which took place about the same time as our agency's rapid carbon study. So one thing we found from the lab data was that there's quite a diversity in soil properties in the city, and Hermine showed this really nicely in her presentation. These are what I think of as the two probably most contrasting types of soils in the city. On the left is the, let's say, naturally deposited soil and till. They're generally under woodland vegetation. The profile is more or less intact. It's acid chemistry. But we have found, as Armin showed, some atmospheric inputs of trace metals to the surface. There's also some effects of invasives. We noticed that there's quite a few earthworms in New York City, and I think that probably has an effect on the surface horizonation, some of these soils. On the other hand, on the right, you have probably the most dramatically altered soil in New York City. Now, there might be a little of that till material in there, but there's a whole lot of artifacts have been added. So you've got a skeletal profile, okay, reduction in the volume for water holding capacity and nutrient holding capacity. These are at the opposite end of the pH range. They're very alkaline. We've found pHs between 8 and 9 to be very common. You've got free carbonates in there. We've identified calcite in the clay mineral fraction. We've got elevated levels of many trace metals and high inputs of black carbon. So one way that I look at this is, you probably heard the term anthroposequence, where all the soil factors remain the same except the effects of human alteration. Well, I think these would be the two end members of an anthroposequence in New York City. Like I said, we had a study to look at some carbon numbers in some of the New York City soils, so 1 meter depth. The top two soils here are in woodland. The rest of them are in naturally deposited materials. The others are in fill. One thing that surprised me, I had heard from some colleagues working on urban soils that the amounts of carbon under turf were equal to that in woodland. And I found that hard to believe, but the data that we have is really supporting that. The clean fill and turf, we've got 13.6 kilograms carbon per square meter, and the till soils in woodland, 12.6. So very similar. And you can see from these figures, once you start adding those carbon-containing artifacts, that the numbers jump up pretty dramatically. A few other factors that tend to increase the carbon content in some of these fill soils are the presence of buried surface horizons and the high bulk density, okay, which contributes to a higher carbon content. But in general, I think we're finding higher carbon contents than you find in most of the literature in our New York City pedons. So some of the things we have in progress, like to come up with a figure for total carbon stocks in New York City. So we'll be sampling some tidal marsh this next year. And as Armin mentioned, we're going to be looking at how much of this carbon is black carbon. Okay. And we've got this really interesting research project with Brooklyn College on microbial diversity and dynamic soil properties, which you heard a little bit about and hear a little bit more about. We're working on a Soil Systems of New York City publication. I think this is a great way to deliver information to the people in New York City. And we're working on an Urban Soils Institute with the New York City Soil and Water Conservation District and Brooklyn College. It will be one-stop shopping for all your soils information in the city. Okay. So I often get asked, what's the soil survey used for in New York City? And these are what I think of as the three main applications: revegetation and restoration. You might have heard of the Million Trees Project, New York City Parks Department. Well, you know, like I said, there's a great diversity in soil properties in New York City. So if you want your million trees to survive, I think you really need to work on matching the right tree with the right soil conditions. Stormwater management, New York City has a combined sewer system, and any good information on hydrologic soil groups or KSAT rates would be very valuable. And environmental resource inventory, if you've got 20 to 25% open space in the city, I think some soils information can help you make land use management decisions. Just a list of our cooperators in the city. We started out with an advisory committee that had let us know what the user's needs were in the soil, provided operational guidance, and helped distribute some of the information, get the word out on the soil survey. And that list grew, keeps growing. So we've worked with city, state, federal groups, academic colleges, universities, environmental nonprofits, and some in the private sector. So I think that's about all I have. I just want to say thanks to the New York City Soil and Water Conservation District, who got us into the city, all our other cooperators who have kept us there, Tyrone Goddard and Luis Hernandez of the agency, and Ray Bryant and John Galbraith, formerly of Cornell, started this whole thing out, and they deserve a lot of credit. The completion of the survey was helped out by the Tolland MLRA office. They assisted us with mapping, with sampling, with digitizing and database population. We've been fortunate to have a great New York City Soil Survey staff throughout the years. And I'd like to thank Jean-Louis for hosting this session today and for all the great work you've done in promoting international cooperation in urban soils. Thank you for that. And I'll leave you. I'll leave you with the smiling faces of the soil scientists, the volunteers and interns of the New York City Soil Survey Program. Thank you.
Everybody looks very happy.
Yeah.
That's great. So we
have
time for some questions.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Rich. Was the pavement in this area ever approved?
No, it wasn't. There was some resistance to change, let's say. So, and I thought, you know, one of the problems with the urban land was that over the years there were so many variable definitions of it. I mean, we tried to keep it to urban land meant impervious surfaces. So when we said there was greater than 90% urban land in a map unit, there was greater than 90% impervious surfaces. But I thought pavement and buildings was a more connotative sound to it, and I would have liked to have done that. But like I said, there was some resistance to change. And Yeah, Phil.
I have a question. You mentioned that the tidal marshes were only 2% of the area that they were. They're obviously important.
Yeah.
We
started a project in Jamaica Bay years ago, but there's a lot of potential there for. We started a project in Jamaica Bay. It was a master's project for Yi Wong, and it was mostly looking for potential sites for eelgrass restoration. But I think it's a great place for a subaqueous survey, and hopefully in the future we can get back there.
Yeah, I just had you had categories of clean fill and dredged material. How much made land is there where they've extended it out?
Good question. I don't know the percent, but I mentioned the substratum phases. Well, we had a substratum phases that covers what they call reclaimed land. So you could probably just look in the survey. That would give you some of it. But we based that on that Merrill map, but you could probably find that out. I don't have the figure offhand, but you could figure that out.
Okay, so thank you very much again, Rich.
Thank you.